going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hey, how about some breaking traffic news?
Okay.
Told by Frank Ladd in the traffic center that there's a crash westbound 70 just past 170, and only the right lane is open.
It's going to slow you up.
Yeah, so be careful out there and drive slow.
It's been a rough week. 270 was closed on Wednesday.
It was?
At 40.
Ew.
Yes,
gross.
All afternoon. That was a little rough, so.
Not great. All right. Joining us in studio today is the new president and CEO of the Jewish Federation of St. Louis. Danny Cohn is with us now. Danny, we appreciate you coming in. How are you doing?
Good. And thanks for having me. You know, St. Louis, it's a beautiful day here today.
Yeah.
Can't think of a better thing to be doing than sitting here talking to you.
We were just talking about you've been in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. You're from Omaha. You lived in Chicago. Now you're here in St. Louis. You've been all over the place.
I'm the wandering Jew. You know, I go... Just like the plant, I go wherever I'm called.
I got a buddy. That's what I call him.
I call myself the Jewish Mary Poppins. I kind of fly in wherever I'm needed to fix whatever needs to be done.
I love it. That's the book we didn't know we needed. That's going to be perfect. I love it. So, but in all seriousness, you really have. You started in Omaha.
I did.
You went to Chicago. Do you want to kind of tell your story of how you started in Omaha and then landed here in St. Louis at the Jewish Federation here?
Sure. So I was born in Omaha and I got a degree in journalism from Kansas. So any Mizzou journalism grads out there, please don't hate on me. You know, I promise I'm a good person.
There's a lot of KU people though here too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But the journalism school, there seems to be this huge rivalry. And I just, you know, kind of like I'm learning to keep my mouth shut when they ask me where I went to high school here, too. So, you know, it's this thing I'm learning. Spent 20 years in corporate communications. And when my daughter was born, I had a crisis of conscience and decided I wanted to go do something that would make her proud. Yeah. I'd been a lay leader in the Federation system since I've been 16. There are 146 federations nationwide. Mm-hmm. And so had my first posting in Birmingham, Alabama, which was great. A little different than St. Louis.
And different than Chicago.
Different than Chicago. But, you know, they have five James Beard Award-winning restaurants in Birmingham. So the food scene is actually off the hook. And so, like, I ate a lot while I was down there. And, you know, there was no COVID in the South. And so, you know, we just enjoyed, you know, everything that life had to offer down there. And St. Louis called, and there is nothing better than a good Midwestern city. And the ability to come in and do what I love every day in a place that is going to be a great place for my kid to grow up, there was no chance that I wasn't going to hop on this.
So what is it that you do every day? If people are wondering,
I
don't even mean...
I wake up,
yeah.
You know, I say a little prayer for you.
Well, this lamp behind me, he pulled that out of his bag.
Right.
Like Mary Poppins.
So the Jewish Federation of St. Louis, I try to tell people it's kind of like the Jewish United Way. It's a way of giving to the community. We support 46 local agencies and another 25 global agencies. On behalf of the Jewish community of St. Louis, we give away roughly $10 million a year. And it's my job. I always tell people, like, I'm kind of like the secular mayor of the Jewish community. You know, I'm not a rabbi. I don't have a pulpit. I don't have a congregation. But, you know, I feel like I'm here to give the Jewish community a big hug and to make sure that the broader community knows that we're here and making sure that our relations back and forth are strong. And so I do a little bit of everything every day, but it's all on behalf of the Jewish community of St. Louis.
Excellent. And so when you talk about what you're doing on behalf of the Jewish community in St. Louis, and then also the community at large, what are some of those? What would that look like on a daily basis?
So we raise a lot of money, and we give a lot of it away. And one of our partners is Jewish Family Service that has this amazing food pantry that has been operating since the creation of the agency. And so we ensure that those who are underserved have fresh food in a dignified way. I mean, you can go there and shop like it's a grocery store. And it's a unique, nice service that we provide. And we also do a lot of advocacy work. So depending on, right now we're working on a bill to combat anti-Semitism in the House. And so that's on behalf of everyone, you know, to make sure that, you know, hate speech is eliminated in the state of Missouri. And so from advocacy to fundraising to just even showing up and, you know, talking to Congressman Bell, who was here this week, about the needs of his constituents. You know, we did a community study recently, so we have all this fresh data on the Jews of St. Louis and how they need to be served and how we can help serve the broader population.
You know, with the different areas you've been, I feel like St. Louis has a very strong and vibrant Jewish population. How does that compare to like Omaha or Birmingham, where is it a smaller population? Is it larger here?
So St. Louis has 45,000 people living in Jewish homes right now. By contrast, Birmingham had 5,000. Oh, wow. Omaha has 8,000. So this is definitely a much larger, diverse community. I would say it's one of the biggest in the Midwest. And it is diversity is the key here. So, you know, Jews aren't monolithic to begin with, but if you start getting into the smaller communities, you see a lot of sameness, as in here in St. Louis. It's like a rainbow bag of Skittles. It is, you have a little bit of everything, and it's really refreshing to be in a city that really values diversity of opinion and people.
And as you take on this new role, do you have any particular priorities that are important to you, whether it's the same as what was happening before or something new, maybe a different direction to take the Federation in?
So my number one priority is dealing with anti-Semitism. You know, we had the incident in Afton last month. We've had graffiti on overpasses. 78% of the Jewish population in St. Louis has been affected by anti-Semitism. And that's a problem. And so, you know, we have said educate, 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 which is also what the Federation does. We go and educate. But this is where the advocacy work really comes in, and making sure that the elected officials and the bills that pass in the House are really there to protect and support. For example, in Afton, the graffiti that happened, it's not a hate crime in the state of Missouri, which I find baffling. I think that, you know, a Nazi symbol is a hate crime within itself. And so my priority is to make sure that we kind of put this to bed here so that everyone can live productive, happy, unified lives. I know that sounds like a very tall order, and it's going to take a very long time.
So what is the challenge there? Because speech, even terrible speech, is protected, is First Amendment protected, unless you're inciting violence. So what is the challenge in trying to combat this when you do have to do it within the framework of the First?
Well, you know, I think the challenge is getting the children educated before this happens, right? And how do we make, for example, Holocaust education, which I believe is required now in the state of Missouri, how do we start that so that the kids understand that the swastika doesn't represent something that is happening now. It is really a callback to an atrocity that happened 80 years ago. And so better civics lessons, you know, better interactions with the religious community so that we have our faith leaders preaching against anti-Semitism from the pulpit. There's a lot of ways to get it done. I often say we're looking for the righteous Gentiles of my generation. And it used to be, would you hide us? And now it's like, will you even stand up and put to bed these vicious tones and lies?
Yeah, it's we're seeing that the rise in anti-Semitic attacks. I mean, it was happening before COVID, during COVID, after COVID. It's continuing. You see anti-Semitic speech on the far left, on the far right. I'm like, my goodness, the only thing that the two parties, you know, two fringe parties agree on is like being anti-Semitic. Like it's insane. Like so many anti-Semitic tropes that people are willing to perpetrate, or they don't even realize they're accepting. How do you fight that when it's coming from all sides?
If I had the answer, I'd probably be president of the United States. But it is something we're working on. You know, it's interesting that you say the tropes, because people sometimes don't even realize what anti-Semitism is, right? So when you look at someone and say, oh, you don't look Jewish, or is that your real nose? Like that's anti-Semitic, right? Mm-hmm. That is a microaggression.
A good friend of mine who is Jewish was at a car dealership, and they made a trope about the prices or something to him.
Yes.
Like, and he's like, what are you doing? It was so offensive.
It's going to take a generation to change. Like, you can't undo what's already done.
Yeah.
You can only set the next generation up for success. And I think that's really where the Federation and the advocacy work and the educational work that we're launching is aiming to do, is really nip this in the bud with the children that are in school now with the proper education. And listen, it's not just about anti-Semitism. There's a lot of Islamophobia out there. There's a lot of hate out there. My job just happens to be worrying about the Jewish community.
Quick question. When you do talk to people or interact with people who, say, have used anti-Semitic tropes, do you find that it's people who aren't friends with, aren't familiar with, don't know Jewish people?
So I think sometimes people get really comfortable, right? And it is, oh, you're my friend and you understand that I didn't mean anything by that. And they don't, like I said, they don't even realize that it is anti-Semitic. But a lot of people have never met a Jew. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest about that, too. Like, we are in the state of Missouri. There's rural population that comes into St. Louis, often here to live and work. And they've never met a Jew before. And so, again, it's us doing a better job getting out into the community. I don't think that a lot of anti-Semitism is purposeful in the microaggression way. I mean, when you're seeing swastikas, when you're seeing,
intentional.
It's intentional. The bigger displays. But again, it doesn't cut any lighter, right? It still cuts deep and it still hurts. And our children are being affected. You don't want your kid coming home from school and crying because, you know, they ask them, you know, you can't come and swim at our pool because our country club's restricted. And I'm making that up as an example. I don't know if there are any restricted country clubs still left in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's interesting. My best friend is Jewish. She's from Israel, and she would compete, you know, competed across the world as a track athlete. And she said, "Oh yeah, we couldn't wear our team warm ups. Like, if you were gonna go get lunch, if she competed in Europe or whatever, you had to be careful with wearing your team warm ups." She said, "I learned early on to be proud of where I was from, but to not broadcast it." And that was something that was very eye-opening for me. And I know a little different, you know, if she's competing for Israel. But that's how she grew up, like just kind of being aware.
You know, we're one generation separated from the Holocaust.
Yeah.
Yesterday was Yom HaShoah, where, you know, we commemorate the death and mourn the 6 million Jews killed by the Nazis. I'll flip that, though. So I've got a 10-year-old who wears her Star of David proudly everywhere that she goes. I mean, there could not be a more proud kid to be Jewish. But we started young, right? And we gave her the right answers to the questions that her friends would ask. You know, in Birmingham, there are a lot of Bible study groups that happened before, and she was not going to Bible study before school, but she was able to have conversations with these kids about why not. And again, we need to start doing that earlier and sooner with the Jewish children so that they can educate their friends along the way.
Danny, if anybody's listening, and whether they are or are not Jewish, and maybe they want to get involved in some way, is there a way that you would invite them to?
Listen, I think the easiest way to get involved is when you see something, say something, right? Like that costs nothing to be nice. If, you know, they can come to, you know, jfedstl.org and find out more. But just modeling their behavior costs them nothing, and knowing what they want their surrounding community to mirror. And so that's the easiest thing to do.
Danny Cohn, President and CEO of the Jewish Federation of St. Louis. Welcome to town.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here.
It's
thank
great
you for coming
to be
in
here.
Studio, too.
Thank you.
Have you seen a baseball game yet?
I have not, but if anyone has a box they want to invite me to, you can find me.
You can find me at
the Federation, and I would be happy to be your guest.
There's only...
We can discuss anti-Semitism together.
There's a caveat. You have to help them win.
We need some wins. Can you throw?
The Jewish Mary Poppins. You never know what's going to happen.
You got a reliever in that bag?
I know. I was like, a bullpen's a little weak. Can you throw?
Use some bullpen arms.
You know, I don't play, but I can pray.
They need a lot of that, too.
I love it.
Danny Cohn, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It is the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX. Well, the city of St. Louis is sinking. At least there are areas around the city that are sinking. And it's been a real problem, and it's got me on edge because I'm afraid of being in my car, for fear that the road will open up and my car will go into it and then I will drown. But we have somebody who is here in the newsroom who is on our sinkhole beat. It is Sean Malone, KMOX reporter and anchor with us here. What's going on with all these sinkholes, Sean?
I mean, all the rain that's come in has now opened up two quite large sinkholes in the city. There's a third that's not nearly as big. I believe it's in South City.
Yep.
But especially the two that have opened up could certainly, you know, one of them for sure swallow a small car inside of it. The other one, I don't know if your full car would make it in, but it'd be like, you know, tipped sideways in. You'd be climbing out of the passenger seat. That's the one that's on Park Avenue, a little bit south of downtown. The other one, the larger one, is on Cass Avenue in the southern part of North City, if you will.
So the sinkhole, most likely, they're saying, have to do with just an old, shoddy sewer system?
Yeah, that's what they're attributing this to. MSD is working on making those repairs right now.
That's the Metropolitan Sewer District,
yes,
right?
Sewer District. So it's their responsibility for these sinkholes. It's not always Metropolitan Sewer District's responsibility, but in these two instances, it's theirs. And the timeline I was given from them is the one on Park Avenue is going to take 2 to 3 weeks, they project, to complete. The one in North City that was quite larger, they say could take up to a month. And in fact, it's so large, they've had to outsource. And one thing I thought was interesting when talking with them about this is it's not as simple as just, you know, replace the pipe work and fill it back up. They explained to me that sometimes when you repair it, you put more stress on, again, the older infrastructure further downstream.
Yeah.
And what you could do if you don't do it right is wind up just creating the same issue, you know, a couple yards somewhat downstream. However, they didn't give me a distance, but at some point downstream, you could just kind of be pushing the issue along and stressing other old infrastructure pipes and what have you. So they're having to be very careful with this repair to not, I guess, find themselves in this same problem a few yards over, a few months down the road.
So, okay, the part of the RAM settlement money was supposed to go to water.
Yes.
Is this the issue that the city was aware of?
Because this is the Metropolitan Sewer District, so these are the sewer lines that they run and operate, which it comes out of their operating budget, their rates and things like that. The city doesn't set that, if I remember correctly. Okay. It's the Metropolitan Sewer District sets their own rates, and they actually just raised rates not too long ago. So they kind of have their own if I understand it correctly. But could this be something that the RAM settlement money goes towards? Potentially. I know fixing the water line so water mains don't break nearly as often is something that city residents voted on as the number one thing they would most like to see. But I don't think can't say for sure if the sewer district is something that the city itself is funding and if that's something the RAM settlement money could go towards.
So this is very much a citywide problem and these issues could pop up all over. So this sounds like a multi-billion dollar fix. right? And what is the city or MSD, what do we know about what the plan is in terms of hope, you know, making sure this doesn't happen again?
One of the biggest things that MSD has said is if you see something, say something. If you see, you know, things starting to sink a little bit or something like that, if it looks suspicious, call them and let them know, because then maybe they can address this problem before a small automobile-sized hole opens up in the middle of a street in St.
And
Louis.
And swallows me up.
And swallows Ranji on his way to work.
So. Well, that's like just like this horrifying image. We were talking about the Go St. Louis Marathon is this weekend, and the route was supposed to be on the street where the park sinkhole is, which is the smaller
one. So Amy's going to fall into the sinkhole before Ranji.
Well, that's what I know. So Mona Vespa, the president of Go St. Louis Marathon, said, quote, "I don't necessarily feel comfortable having 10,000 people pounding on pavement a couple feet away from that." Like, you don't want to be anywhere near a sinkhole, even if you could put cones around it. Like you said, the infrastructure around it could collapse. So that's why they did, like we mentioned, they moved it a block over. But that's kind of a terrifying image of all those people next to a sinkhole.
I feel like what we're learning is we should, until we get a handle on this, until we find out what the hell is going on, nobody should walk or drive anywhere.
Just stay put.
Just stay put.
Shelter in place.
Shelter in place. Don't go to work. Don't walk down the street. Don't do anything that might jeopardize your body.
Well, Sean, how does this relate to at all to the burst pipes that we've seen? And I think it was Lindell Forever was destroyed because of the water, that the broken pipe. It's all the same issue,
really,
right?
The correlation at the end of the day is just it's an aging city infrastructure. You know, you think about 100 years plus goes by with the city infrastructure, things get old, things break down over time, but it's just a lot of things that have gotten old that are now breaking down because of that. That's the problem. And you know, you mentioned the water division in terms of trying to fix this. The Rams settlement money, you know, the Mayor Tashara Jones, when she was in office, said, because we asked her about it, there's not enough money in the Rams settlement money to solve the water issue and replace all the water lines for the city.
Oh, yeah.
There's just not enough money for something like that to be done with just the Rams settlement money. You would need a lot more, you know, federal grants, things of that nature to try to fix that issue in its entirety. So that's, you know, now that we're going to talk about, you know, the sewers and trying to replace all the sewer lines as well, that's going to be tough. And something that I thought was interesting, I was pointed out, Alderman Shane Cohn made the point that just what St. Louis is built on top of makes it problematic. There's a lot of limestone there. He said, and I didn't know this, it was known as Cave City at one point because of all the caves that were around. So I didn't know that. I thought that was interesting, but it's one of those, like, what can you do at that point besides, you know, to quote Patrick Starr from SpongeBob, take Bikini Bottom and push it somewhere else. Can we push St. Louis somewhere else so it's not built on limestone and on top of caves? That's really what more could be done?
That's an option, or maybe we could just stop digging. Stop digging into the ground.
I think Sean should ask the mayor that specific
should
question.
Should we push St. Louis
like
somewhere
Bikini
else?
Bottoms.
All right.
I don't think we have enough Rams settlement money for that either.
Our sinkhole reporter, Sean Malone, thank you. Hey, real quick, before we go to break, we're about to talk about the annoying things about baseball. We all love baseball, Cardinals fans or whatever you're a fan of, but there are things about the game that might annoy you. Do you have a thing that annoys you about baseball?
Yes, the egos that umpires have that has prevented Major League Baseball from modernizing and slowed it with things like instant replay, because for so long, it has not been from the umpire's perspective about getting the call right. It's about being told you're right.
That's, you know what, man?
That's my soapbox.
Great call.
That might be the best.
Sean Malone.
He's the best.
He is our sinkhole and umpire reporter.
Get over yourself, umpires.
104.1 FM. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
I'm infielder Thomas Ajayi, and you're listening to the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Well,
what if Thomas Ajayi said, "I'm Thomas Ajayi, infielder for the Cardinals, and here's what I hate about baseball.
Here's what I find annoying."
Hey, you should know that the Gas House Gang is coming up at 12. Bernie Miklas and me. We will talk Cardinals baseball. We'll talk to Dan Guerrero, who covers the Cardinals for the Post-Dispatch. So that's all coming up. We got a lot to discuss, Amy.
Yeah, you do. Well,
starting at 12.
Well, here we go. We asked everyone to text in 314-436-7900 or to leave a voice message on the Odyssey app about what annoys you about baseball. Sean Malone, great one.
Had a great one. Umpires
talking about the egos. Yeah.
And it did hold back replay for a long time because the umpires didn't want to be proven wrong on the field in front of everybody in real time.
So here's one from Blair. She's watching on Facebook, on the YouTube stream. Blair says, what bothers me about baseball are all the numbers that make a sub-average player sound better than they really are. He hit that ball at this speed. It came off his bat at this speed. He throws the ball to first at this speed. Who cares? If he hit it at 100 miles an hour and got out, he got out. End of story. Just stop making something sound better than it really is.
Listen, Blair, I don't totally disagree, but those numbers can tell us something. So Wilson Contreras, for example, right now not producing, but he's hitting the ball hard. So what that tells us is eventually the numbers are going to come.
Is that always true?
Almost always, yeah. Like if a guy hits the ball hard, as opposed to just making weak contact, mm-hmm. then eventually those the hits that he's getting, the balls that he's hitting are going to fall in for hits. So eventually it will come. Most likely. Here's for me, Amy, I was thinking about this when the subject came up.
Yeah.
And it all started because Matt Pajeski, our producer, said he doesn't like the fact that ballpark dimensions are different. Mm-hmm. They should all be the same size.
Yes, they should.
No.
What if it hits the green giant?
Stupid. No, I like the I don't like the intentional quirkiness. So like what Houston did when they put that stupid hill out in center field because it was quirky. I don't like that. But Fenway Park was built in an area where there just wasn't space. So they made the wall the way it is. I don't mind it. So that's where this started. And then I was thinking about the game itself.
Yeah.
All of the stuff that I used to not like about baseball has kind of been corrected. And there were two really big things. I hated watching pitchers hit. I hated it. It's just, I don't like it. I don't care about the strategy. Nobody's ever bought a ticket to go watch a double switch. I don't care about any of that. I want to see somebody who's likely to get a hit and a pitcher, as opposed to a pitcher who bats 120. I just don't want to see it. And the other thing was the length of games, because I just did not like watching 4.5 hour games in June, right? So the pitch clock solved it. But then you guys reminded me of something.
Okay.
When you said there should be a roof on every stadium.
No.
I was kidding.
I think
terrible.
That every stadium that gets built from here on out,
hate it,
should have to have at least a retractable roof.
Nope.
Rainouts are stupid.
What about a screen?
A screen?
A glass roof.
To keep the bugs out.
Yeah, I don't care.
No, I don't like the roof idea at all. Here's one, and I think this is going to be controversial.
Yep.
Because I brought it up with a few people yesterday who all disagreed with me. But I think it's weird that the manager dresses like the players. Like, why does he wear their outfits? You're not going to play. I get it. The player manager days, maybe that's where it started. I don't know if it started then. But no one does that anymore. Put on, you don't, maybe, I don't, I'm not saying you have to wear a suit because it's 100 degrees outside.
No, you don't wear a suit.
But you could wear a different outfit. You don't need, what if in football, Bill Belichick literally wore football pads? What if Jim Montgomery wore the hockey sweater? He would look so stupid.
So
with the hockey sweater on, standing behind the bench. And I get it. I think people are going to be really mad at me for this, but I'm just objectively watching other sports. It's weird that the manager slash coach wears the same outfit as the players.
I agree with you on this. And most managers these days are not wearing the jersey. Some do, but a lot of them just wear the team pullover or whatever. And I don't think you need to have baseball pants. So I totally
agree
with you on
that. But they wear baseball pants.
I know, but they have to.
Just in case when they go out and pull the pitcher, they slide into the mound. Why are you wearing baseball pants?
You're right. It's goofy now.
Wear a nice trouser.
Here's one from a 314. MLB increased the width of the bases from 15 inches to 18. Oh. Why not 17? Which would be the same width as home plate, making all bases the same size.
Wait, home plate's bigger than the other bases?
Yeah.
Really? Has it always been that way?
Well, yeah.
Why, well, no, you're saying, well, yeah. Does everybody know this?
I don't. Not everybody.
314-436-7900. Did anyone out there know that home plate is, well, it's shaped differently?
Yeah. It's shaped differently.
So I knew it was shaped differently, but I guess I just thought somehow the dimensions were.
Is it wider? The width is a little bit wider than the other bases.
I guess that makes sense. I guess I never thought about it.
From 618, baseball will always be a Bush League sport because teams can take the best hitter out of action by walking him. Okay, that's fair, I guess.
What?
I've got an annoyance with baseball with the intentional walk. I think it should still be four pitches. I don't like how you can just say, I'm going to walk this guy, and then you don't have to throw four balls.
Wait, I thought they always threw four balls.
Not anymore.
Well, they used to, but now they could just say walk them, and they kind of like Little League.
Oh, that's
because
dumb.
That those pitches could land anywhere. I mean, it's not a guarantee that it's going to be caught by the catcher and be a ball.
You're right. And I used to think that. I was in agreement with you on that for a long time, but then I realized it doesn't happen that often where a ball gets thrown away.
It could. And I don't think it's saving time. I mean, a little bit of time, but it's not saving so much time by getting rid of four quick pitches.
Well, okay, that individually doesn't save a lot of time, but if you put that together with the pitch clock and with everything else, they're saving a ton of time, and games are moving. They're so much more fun to watch, and people are watching longer than they used to. Here's one. What I hate about baseball is the inconsistency of calling balls and strikes. I can't wait until they use the automated system. And I agree with that. I cannot wait until they get that done right.
Do you know what my favorite thing is about baseball? And I know this is the opposite of what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
But I really love that they still use wall phones to call the bullpen.
How else would they do it?
Cell phone.
Cell phone or an iPad or something.
You're not allowed to have that in the dugout.
I love that they have the wall phones. I love the old-timey phones. I hope they don't ever get rid of that.
Here's a texter from a 217. That's sort of central Illinois, like Springfield area. They don't like the foul ball boy.
Wait, what?
Why does that bother you? Like, someone's got to get those balls down the line. You can't make the play.
I get it. I do find it irritating the way they just sit on their chair there on the sideline. It's a little annoying.
From a 636, I hate how the season is 162 games in the heat of summer and the playoffs are incredibly short in winter-like conditions in October. I disagree with that part. I like the October baseball.
Baseball. But what if the baseball season were 60 games?
No.
Wouldn't it
that,
be,
that's too
it
little.
It would be a little more manageable.
I could be okay with 154 back to weight.
154?
Yeah.
When did that change?
Oh, shoot. 60s. Was it 60s? I don't remember.
So when you were in first grade?
Or 70s.
Oh.
No, it was the 60s when that happened. This message is from YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
TW watching us on YouTube. Annoyed by the designated hitter. It is a shallow compromise to aid retail fans and hold their flighty attention spans.
Wait, a retail fan?
People who are not diehards who are just showing up to watch and then they go home and they
don't
care.
Is that a phrase, a retail fan?
I've never heard it, but I know that's what he means. Retail fan. Okay. I don't agree. And the reason I don't agree is that pitchers, they can't hit, man. They may have been able to hit when they were playing and hitting every day. But the game is just, it's stacked against you. You can't take at bats, like two at bats every 5 days and expect to be good. You just can't.
But 1961. What if,
1961.
What if the perfection of baseball is in its imperfections?
Okay.
No.
No. This message says, Ghost Runner in extras.
Yeah.
I hate that. A lot of people don't like
they
it.
They don't like it.
And I like
feels
what...
Feels gimmicky. Feels gimmicky to them.
Yeah, I kind of agree with what Major Garrett said and what John Rooney said yesterday. I could get down with it. Let them play the 10th inning without that. Let them just play a 10th inning as regular, and then maybe in the 11th or 12th or something like that, then you add the ghost runner. I could totally get down with that idea. Here's one. I get annoyed about the infield fly rule in baseball.
Hmm.
I didn't get it when I played baseball. I don't get it now. Why is it a thing?
I love that. That is how I feel. I don't get it either. Make them catch the ball.
Here's why, Amy.
Okay.
Because when there's a runner at first and second, Yes.
Okay.
Or bases loaded.
Okay.
When there's a pop-up on the infield, right?
Okay.
The runners can't go anywhere because they'll be out, right? So they have to wait till the ball till something happens. What they did not want is for the defense to intentionally drop the ball to get a double play.
It's part of the game. That's what I would say.
Used to happen?
No, I'm saying that should be part of the strategy. That's where the ball landed.
Part of the strategy?
That's part of the game. You're talking about just how you hit. If you didn't want that play to happen, hit it harder. Hit it out of the infield.
How about this?
That is stupid.
How about this? You can let it drop, but you have to let it bounce twice before you pick it up.
That's ridiculous.
I think I agree with the infield fly rule. I make it interesting. Make it difficult. Make it scary.
No, because all you're doing is ending an offensive threat. Like, you're a team set up for a big inning, and they got first and second, and that's what people pay for. They pay for offense. They go to ball games to watch that. So you got first and second, one out. You're thinking, oh, man, we're going to have a big inning here, and then pop up on the infield, and some doofus gets to drop it and then get a double play.
Has the infield fly rule been around for as long as you can remember?
I don't know when they brought it in, but, yeah.
I think it's funny thinking of someone in 1897 going, you know, the people are paying for offense. We need the infield fly rule.
Well, they are. People watch sports for offense. They don't watch it for defense. It's just not that interesting.
That's rude.
In Major League Baseball, there is too much emphasis placed on home runs, hence too many strikeouts and lower batting averages.
Okay, guys, real quick, I wasn't wrong. The infield fly rule started in 1895.
Yeah. So that's part
of
baseball, Matt.
And it's plagued the game for
years. It has been holding
the sacred sport of baseball for so far too long.
Yeah, that's your problem with baseball.
Back.
That's it.
It's holding the game back.
Make baseball great again.
Here's one from a 636. I'm upset because I can't ever watch a local baseball team unless I have a TV subscription. And somebody else said local games should be free for people who live in the area. You know what? I agree with that, but here's what I can offer you. I can't do anything about subscriptions and how much it costs, but I do know you can listen to Cardinals Baseball for free on 104.1 FM KMOX and the Odyssey app. You can have it on your phone. That seems like a pretty damn good deal to me.
What about when they stop beer sales in like the 7th inning or 8th inning, whenever it is?
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Seems rude.
It's totally rude. Uber home. It's fine. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Yeah, Bernie's going to be with me for the Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock. We're going to talk about the Cardinals series loss to the Braves, and then we'll get into the Blues game tonight. They've got game 3 of that series. It's Chris and Amy now until we say goodbye. A couple of text messages have come in reminding young Matt Pajeski, who hates the infield fly rule.
What an idiot.
That the Cardinals would not have won the World Series in 2011 without the infield fly rule.
We could have won it a different way.
Dude.
We were going to win it no matter what.
Oh,
I'm on Matt's side. We could have won it a different way.
Did the infield fly rule hit a home run in Game 6 into center field, you know, like David Freese did? No. David Freese did that himself.
Well, they wouldn't have won before that.
You know what? It doesn't matter.
Here's a message. The crowd doing the wave when the game is close within a run or two. Save it for big blowouts and pay attention to the game. That's right.
That's a serious fan there.
Well, I agree.
No shenanigans when it's close.
Yeah, no fun.
This is not
fun at the game.
Baseball is not about fun. It's about winning.
Here's a person. This is from an 812. Where's that? 812. Baseball players wearing chains while they play. I hate it.
Really?
Some have multiple chains. Someone may someday get tangled up with another shirt after every pitch. Well, this is from Roger. Oh, it's from Evansville, Indiana.
What? Who's going to get tangled in the chain?
I don't understand the chain thing only for this reason.
I think it looks good.
It does look good, but it looks suboptimal. Like, it does get in the way, hit you in the face.
No, that amazes me about it, because there are tennis players who wear chains and long earrings.
Don't get it.
I don't know how they do it. I think I would if I could.
Like when you're running and it's hitting you in the face, I don't know why you'd want that.
It looks
Chris Sale,
irritable,
really good pitcher, just won a Cy Young. Yeah. But early in his career, he had this chain that his grandma had given him, and after every pitch, he had to tuck it back in the jersey. Every pitch back in the jersey. That seems like it would be annoying. And guess what? He doesn't wear it anymore, I don't think. So I get it.
So I will say, I think there's something like, I don't know, I forgot the number, but like $1 million worth of diamonds in baseball fields, in baseball diamonds, because the players will
off.
Wear jewelry and they and a little diamond will fall out. Yeah.
We got a voice message from Bob.
Chris, Amy, remember when there was only one statistic? Batting average. Now we have so many, everybody gets confused. Whatever happened to the batting average?
Well, it's still there, Bob.
I'm on Bob's side. You know what? I don't like exit velocity.
Why? You don't want to know how hard a guy's hitting a baseball?
Mm-mm.
I like to know that.
I want to know his batting average.
Here's a message. I hate that the Yankees don't have names on the back of the uniforms.
Really? I think it's cool.
I hate it too. Boston
really?
Does the same thing. At home.
I kind of like pretentious teams.
It is pretentious.
It's very pretentious.
How about this has nothing to do with baseball, but this person does not like the fake crowd noise when the Battle Hawks are on a road game because there are no fans in those stadiums. I agree with that, too. Battle Hawks play at home, and they always get a great crowd. All right, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Back tomorrow, 9 o'clock, Amy Markscores and Michael Kelly will
right.
be with you on the Chris and Amy show tomorrow, and John Hancock for the first hour as well. So that is tomorrow's show. Anything you missed on the Odyssey app, download it to your phone and listen to the podcast later if you missed. We had a really good show today. A lot of fun.
Great.
DMC was with us. Coming up next, it is the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas and me, Chris Ranji. We will talk about the Cardinals and what in the world is going on with that bullpen and more. Blues game tonight, all that coming up on the Gas House Gang next.